or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
I've been accumulating like little one-liner ideas that are my best ideas, and I really wanted to start the show by sharing a bunch of those with you. But let me give you a little heads up about where we're going to go after that. I've also created a list of questions that are probing questions that I think we all should be asking ourselves. It's the kind of questions that may, in fact, make you want to change your life. So I'm going to be asking you a bunch of those. And the main purpose of today's show is you. I try to devote one show a month, roughly, to mainly answering your questions. I call them workovers, 3-minute career makeovers. I can't decide which is a better title. But basically, the notion is you call in with a problem you have related to your work life or that of someone you love. And I ask you some probing questions and try to cut to the chase right away and give you something practical that you can act on immediately. So I'm not going to give out the phone number yet because I don't want you sitting on hold for too long. But that's what we're going to spend most of the time doing. But first, I want to throw out some of these, what I think are my favorite. I know they're my favorite and new ideas. So I used to think that the more authentic you were, the better. The more honest you were, the more probing you were in conversations, that, you know, the truth shall set you free. Alas, and I'm disappointed at this, but I've found as I look back on my life, I think that the more authentic and more honest I was outside of a very narrow range of acceptability, the less wise that was. I'm more likely to create antipathy without changing people's minds. People are more likely to use it as ammunition against me. So for what it's worth, I like to think it's useful now to recognize that candor, especially in today's environment where there really is an orthodoxy that unless you buy into that orthodoxy, you are given a label, you are shunned, you are called things. So I really think that authenticity, while I love it, I crave it, I honor it, and I welcome it when I see it, I think if I were to be helpful to you, maximally helpful, I would share with you the fact that I think authenticity often, especially in 2014, and acceleratingly so, imposes too great a price to be worth being authentic. So think twice before being candid about many things. Second point I want to make. I had a woman who was a client just Friday who is all, she's almost a cliche. She's all about the Marin self-esteem movement and empowerment and cheerleading others and spiritual, you know, the world will provide. She was like one, in the way she dressed too, she was one big cliche. And she called herself a coach and the like, and she was simply trying to make more money and as a coach. And I couldn't, you know, it's important very often as a career counselor to withhold sharing your own values with the person because you're not trying to turn them into you. But I just couldn't resist. And I was talking about the fact that, and it was the moment I felt best in the whole session. I said, real self-esteem never comes from affirmations, from externalities like waiting for the world to provide or any of that crap. It ultimately comes from becoming the go-to guy or go-to gal at something. It can be in the non-profit sector, for-profit sector, doesn't matter. It usually is best in some little narrow niche. It is self-esteem, and you're really earning your space on the planet. It does not come from your being on this earth. It does come from your doing. It is being excellent at something, and that's not enough. It's being excellent at it and then accomplishing it. I don't care if you're an entomologist who specializes in a certain kind of arachnid, but becoming an expert at that thing and then focusing your efforts, not on dabbling and learning a little bit about everything and doing a little. People make a difference when they are experts. So it's becoming expert at something, whatever it is you choose, and then focusing your time and efforts to sharing that expertise to make the world a better place, whether it is your small sphere of influence, or it is the whole world, or even the cosmos, that is what is going to make you a worthy person. And we're not allowed to say, we're not all equally worthy. We are not. But to me, the key to worthiness and to legitimate self-esteem is that laser focus on becoming excellent and then sharing that excellence. Next point. Complete, these are all, they're not synergistic with each other. These are just my separate, I kept a list of all of the my best points, and I keep them on Twitter as an archive of my best ideas, and here I expand them for you. When you're giving a talk, and many people like to give talks merely for sharing or as marketing tools or whatever, or it's just part of their job, keep track, and I've never done this, but I'm going to be doing this from now on. Take note of what gets the best audience reaction, which statement, which story, which idea, which whatever, and incorporate more of those into your subsequent talks. Now, I need to give a caveat there. I do think it's a mistake to simply focus on what pleases the audience. I could please my audiences by telling jokes the entire time. Many radio shows could fill the lines with callers by having psychics on. You don't want to completely focus on pleasing your audience. You ultimately, to thine own self be true, is really very wise advice. That said, you also don't want to be oblivious to your audience. And so one of the ways that you at least identify what your audience likes is to be aware when you're giving a talk, instead of being narcissistically wrapped up in your own thoughts about, you know, what's the best way, how am I doing, am I looking good, am I sounding good, to hell with that. I mean, that's too strong. You know, it's fine to focus on that to some extent, but also do note as you're talking what's getting the best audience reaction and then decide whether indeed you want to incorporate more of that into your next talk. Next tip. Just read a statistic. College tuition is up 1,200% since 1978. Four times the inflation rate. This comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is not some anti-college bashing person. This is straight out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. One would think that if college tuition was going up at that amazing rate, 400% of the inflation rate, that there would be more learning, or at least a great deal of value added, whether it be in the learning or the employability sense. Well, as I've said here on this show, 44% of all people who start as freshmen don't graduate, even if given 6 years. And of those who graduate, half of them under 25 are doing jobs they could have gotten straight out of high school. And the romanticized idea of the dorm life is completely exaggerated, which logically makes sense. When you put people together in a dorm for the first time away from family without parents' watchful eye, you're setting the stage for not exactly, let's just say, the most productive form of development. We romanticize the notion that, oh, these wonderful lifetime friendships and they spend time 2 a.m. discussing the meaning of life. No. Too often it's just sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And is that worth the $200,000 that 4 years at a brand name private school costs? And graduate, we have, you know, you would think, okay, that's undergraduate, but what about graduate school? Our degree proliferation is so profound that we have oversupplies of graduates, whether it be lawyers or MBAs, or even, I was saddened to find, PhDs in molecular biology, which if I had to bet in the abstract what was going to yield the most benefit, it would be a PhD in molecular biology. And yet when I gave a talk on career advice for PhDs in neuroscience, I had 500 people in my concurrent session. This is not a keynote. 500 people in a concurrent session, all young people with PhDs in neuroscience. And most of them were terrified they couldn't get jobs. And then when I went to the University of Calgary, and I was asked to give an all-day workshop on careers for people in the sciences, there was massive attendance and massive terror that after all of that investment in time and money, that they, even these august people, finishing a PhD in science, hard science is no joke. They were wonderful people. I loved them. They were earnest. They were thoughtful. They were not about marketing and schmoozing and networking. They were about substance. And those people are having trouble getting jobs. So please, my dear listeners, we're in an era where the conventional wisdom that more degrees equals more money, you'll earn $1 million more over your lifetime, is just no longer relevant. My board operator, Joanne Marr, wrote a question here. If tuition is going up, why are there fewer professors and an increase in lower paid lecturers? Where is the money going? I love you, Joanne. Great question. It is going to two things. It is going to lush campuses, because they're all trying to compete on crappy grounds, like, you know, on a wonderful ground, but on crappy bases. They have lovely dorms, golf courses, fancy swimming pools. But it's also going to the research enterprise, which is, I swear, please do not think, if this is something I know about, it's this. My PhD is in the evaluation of innovation. I've been a consultant to 15 college presidents. I know higher ed from the inside. So much of the research enterprise is bogus. Research that everybody knows up front is going to do no good for anybody. In fact, it's going to distract professors away from the task of educating people. But a lot of your money that goes, that tuition money, goes to subsidizing that crap research. Because it's all a little family, those professors. They all like writing for each other. It's like a little cult. And they all, whether they be the administrators or the faculty, they're all cut from the same cloth. They all train the same way. They all have the PhD. They're all taught to deify basic and abstract research. And that's where your money is going. And, of course, mammoth administrations. I am blown away at UC Berkeley's mammoth administration. If you look, I used to get the printed version of the directory, the campus directory. The literally thousands of administrators, co-directors, coordinators, directors, associate deans, assistant deans, deans, provosts, associate vice provosts, vice presidents, assistant vice presidents, that your money is going to an absolutely, what's the good word for it? Like a straitjacket. They're like marionettes, and they all have strings on each other, and so at the end nobody can move. It's a bankrupt exercise. It's a bankrupt entity, especially undergraduate education. But even graduate education, where they say they can prepare teachers, crap. I would love to use a curse word. I can't. The people who predominantly train teachers at the universities are theoretical academicians, not master teachers. And the universities don't give a crap. If they really care to create great teachers or great lawyers or great doctors, they would find the most transformative, the people who are both the greatest professionals in the career as doctors or lawyers or teachers, and who also have the magical gift to transform students, to inspire, educate, to make the difficult sound easy or make the difficult easier to understand. But the universities don't give a crap. They give a crap about their little silly research and the prestige that accrues from having lots of journal articles in the Journal of Obscure Economics or whatever. So don't be a sucker anymore. The best way to learn anything is as in a mentorship, in an apprenticeship with a master practitioner. If you want to be in radio, don't get a bachelor's in radio broadcasting from San Francisco State, let alone a private school that charges five times as much. Volunteer to be an assistant at the elbow of a master radio person or five. If you want to be a lawyer, you know you don't have to go to law school. I know that's what most do. But there is a way in which by mentorship you can become you can take the bar exam and become a lawyer. Find the most successful and ethical lawyers you can possibly find in a narrow niche, because you can't be an expert at anything. And please, You apprentice yourself to that person and persons. You can never one person only has so much to teach. But if you go and apprentice yourself to four or five masters at whatever it is you want to become a master at, you will learn a tremendous amount. And of course, believe me, I love to learn. It's not like I'm against liberal arts learning. I love it. I subscribe to The New Yorker so that I can read magnificent writing. I listen to selected shorts because through fiction, one can learn a tremendous amount about the universals of life and being a good citizen and being a thoughtful human being. But universities are not the place to do that. Not anymore. When I went to school and it was $34, you know, when I went to college, I went to Queens College in New York and it was $34 a semester, fine. I got a free ride to get a PhD from Berkeley. Well, okay, then it was even marginally worth it, but I swear I wouldn't even do that anymore because my time is worth a lot too. I gave them 6 years for that damn PhD and most of it was not worth the effort at all, or certainly not worth the opportunity cost, what I could otherwise be doing. There's much more I could say, but as I promised, I devote most of the show to you, specifically, rather than these general thoughts. So if you or someone you love has got a work-related problem, directly related to work or even indirectly, I've been finding over the years that I can give people all the career guidance in the world, but sometimes they've got personal issues, fears, depressions, relationship problems, lack of relationship. So anything that's directly or unrelated to career, I'm here to help you. It is my mission in life. I invite you to call for what I call a three-minute workover. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while I'm waiting for calls to come in, I'm going to continue on with this list of things that are my favorite new ideas. So a client came in and was really angry. He said, I had to miss a work meeting. I was going to my uncle's funeral. Someone came in and took charge of the meeting that I was supposed to run. And he just took his role, and he kind of subtly badmouthed the guy who was away at his uncle's funeral. You know, we like to think that humankind is benevolent and it generally acts in people's best interest, and sometimes they do. But it is a tough world out there. And while the unemployment rate is going down, the employment rate in good jobs is not going down. It is really tough. So I encourage you to keep your eyes open. Yes, respect. Yes, expect the best from people. But be careful out there. Be careful out there. Another one. This is just a quote from Arnold Schopenhauer, whom I like. I've been reading him lately. Quote, talent hits a target that no one else can hit. Genius hits a target no one else can see. I just like it. I want to do one more. We all think we're good communicators, but most people aren't. And so, when you're a listener and you don't understand what someone's saying, it's tempting to blame yourself and think you're stupid and that you're not going to be, you know, that it's your fault. I encourage you to more often explain that you don't know, to say you don't understand what the person said. Would you mind re-explaining it? They won't think you're dumb. More likely, they will think you respect what they say enough that you want a re-explanation. So I think that's a useful tip, is to, when you don't understand something, realize it. Yeah, it may be you, but it may be them. More often, ask for a re-explanation. If you care to get one, sometimes you don't really give a damn what they say, but there you go. Anyway, I'll give out the phone number again. Somebody wants if any of you want a three-minute career makeover, you got a work-related problem of any sort, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, whether you're 16 or 76, you know, whether it's a practical problem or a psychological problem, I don't care. I usually can help. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko for a three-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm impressed with your generosity and your telling your own story. I like to tell my story too, and I'll be brief, but what I have found as I approach July 1st, my 85th year on this planet. I'm grateful for every day, regardless of all the struggles. Growing up as a child of poverty, because it was 1929 that I was born. What I have found in this life is the challenge of making choices, being curious, and having an open heart. Now, what I know also is if we want to do things, the key is to practice. Practice, practice is the most fun we can have on earth. I had ADHD, didn't know it till I was 73. Life can get very complicated, but what I do know is people who are learning always, willing to be of service, and that's what you do, Marty, and others on the station particularly. What a gift we've got. And I love to say, fun is free. Have some, but also radio supported, but it also gives us everything we need to learn.
Well, a lot of wisdom there, and I really appreciate the call, Shan. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
You take care. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind? How can I help?
Marty, I've been listening on and off. You have a great show here. I wanted to share a quick note for a gentleman that I helped move to United States from Iran, and he had taken a course, online course in Iran, gotten his bachelor for $3,000 from India. And this gentleman was living here for 6 months. We were helping him, he and his wife, and then he landed a job in Walnut Creek, and for 3 months he worked for temporary and then became full-time. Then the company got bought off by Autodesk. Now he makes over six digits. So it's wonderful for him and everything else. But that's the education today, what you were just talking about, which was fantastic. You know, it doesn't require, it's a new ways of going to school, new ways of studying and specializing in a very, very niche arena. You could be extremely successful and do well.
Yeah, what I'm also believing is that this is the dawn of a new era of education. We were talking about the absurdity of the I think, a bankrupt model of the traditional campus-based education. But still, even the online courses, many of them suck. The percentage of people who complete the courses is low. They're very often they're simply standard university-based taught courses that are that are just ported to online. Yes, Udemy uses many more practical experts, but I think the next generation, and I've said this before on the radio, but I do think it's the real transformation that's going to occur in education is when we create courses that are taught by a dream team of the nation's most transformational experts in whatever, using interactive video simulation. The people change and get transformed by being put in simulations, in situations in which they can really interact. And I think once we start to transform those online courses into far more immersive, interactive experiences taught by these dream teams, then we will truly have seen what the theoretical potential of education is. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call. Let me go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What's on your mind? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a dilemma. I feel like I could probably make more money working rather than collecting what I'm figuring is not proper Social Security mental disability money. It's my opinion, but I was told, and I don't know if you could refer me to any website or any, maybe even getting a lawyer. I was told that all I could make is $1,700 a year, and then I'll be pulled off if I make too much in a year. Or can you give me a rep?
Yeah, you're cutting out. What I recommend in situations like this is to have a consultation with either somebody, because you're on disability. If you've spoken to, the organization, the entity that is responsible for that is the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation. But there are some people who are very knowledgeable and some who are not. And so I would encourage you to talk to find the right person at the Department of Voc Rehab. But also, you know, and I know it's not $1,700 a year. I think it's $1,700 a month or something. I really do believe that most people feel crappy about themselves when they're just receiving money. If you can, even if you're going to lose some money in the phase out of income earning, you will feel better about your existence to the extent to which you are working. Now, maybe if there really are pretty onerous, you know, reductions in your income, maybe you want to do it as a volunteer. But the message I want to leave you with is that you figure out, and we can spend a few minutes doing this together now if you like, what would be the best kind of work for you to be doing, and let's figure out how you can get to do that work, whether it be for pay or volunteer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
What kind of, if there was a God, and God were looking down upon you, and said, this is the kind of work where you could make the biggest difference to humankind, whether it be in a, you know, one person or society, what kind of work should you be doing?
Oh my gosh, I'd be working on the, by the way, I really was very happy to hear that the money that I receive, if I went out and worked for every dollar I made, I'd have that phase out period, 50 cents would be reduced.
Right.
But I spoke to an economics professor at local community college briefly, the editor of that same community college newspaper. The editor had no idea why an individual would say if there was a web address with a website for this was a ambition I had, a web address in the local print publications, the newspapers, basically, for a website so that transparency and accountability thing could be, you know, basically directed by the customers who buy the newspapers. I was told that on an NPR station, Talk of the Nation years ago, that the economic fallout would hit like a ton of bricks.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
What they really want to do is try to maybe even get involved with linguistics or something, and it's been done before at UC Berkeley, to somehow or other get take information that is kind of locked away.
Again, I'm still not understanding. Let's see if you can try to say...
An advocate for media transparency, I guess, and accountability.
Well, one thing I certainly would say, I agree that the media, like everybody else, has its very strong biases, and it presents things in a way. Journalists are people who have deliberately opted out of the real world, pretty much, and they opine as though they know the world very well, and therefore their biases are very not transparent. So if you're worried about media transparency, the best way to do it is you can do it on your own. You can start a blog. And you could, you know, there are certain major, there's Media Matters, and there are a number of media watchdogs. But if that's your interest, you know, start a blog, which costs zero. You go to blogger.com, and for free, if you have a computer, or even if you have to use a public library, if you don't have a computer, you go and you can start to write, do some investigative journalism of your own. You're not going to get paid, but it's going to feel very rewarding. Let's say there's somebody who's a journalist who you believe is not being transparent about something important about them, write about that. Do some honorable research into that person. And, you know, it's not going to change the world, but that's a way to feel useful. Anyway, I want to leave you with that. You take care. Okay. I want to take one more call before I start to do some other stuff here. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Oh, hi there. I love your show. Thank you so much for it. I just wanted to see if you can check on this for me. I have two kids, 3 and 5. I'm a dancer, and I work at an arts center here in San Francisco. I was an international student at Nassau Community College, and now I never finished because it costs too much. I have tons of experience working with kids, and I love it. It's just my real, true passion. And I'm just looking into going and finishing at City College in San Francisco.
Yes.
And I just can't really seem to find the time. I don't know how I'm going to do it because I'm dealing with this feeling of I need to finish my education. Although I believe exactly what you were saying at the beginning, if you want to do something, there's tons of way of doing it. And that's the way I've been doing it pretty much all my life. So I'm just dealing with this feeling of, do I really need to finish? What is it that it makes me want to have a degree? And is it, you know what I mean? I'm
yes.
I think I'm stuck in a spiritual place right now. Is
right.
Am I worth it, a degree? Can I go and apply for jobs if I don't have a degree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, here's my answer to that one. Many people, and you sound like you're a Latina immigrant whose parents are from Mexico or something, right?
I am from Argentina, and I immigrated myself by okay. myself in 98 to New York.
And am I correct, though, that there's this expectation that has been perpetrated by your family and perhaps by society that you're not somehow complete unless you finish a degree, because then you're kind of an imposter? Is that what's going on in your brain?
That's definitely what's going on. My sister is a lawyer. The other one is an architect. My brother is in international commerce. And I just left the house, and my dad now looks back, and he's like, look, all the things you have accomplished, and you don't have a degree. So they're very proud of me.
Good.
And this is it's just, I think, what you're saying. And I realize that it's a spiritual fight, and I'm trying to find peace with it.
Right. Let's talk about it. I mean, I love talking about spiritual stuff that's not religious, but spiritual. You know, if your gift is to somehow be involved in the world of dance with children, you're going to make more progress in doing that without the degree. If you can spend the 2 years or 3 years that it would take to get a degree, forget about the money, and if you were fighting your way into the right kind of job, for example, I don't know anything about that world, but I know that the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts has, here in downtown San Francisco, has all kinds of events that are kind of in that general ballpark. I would try to...
That's what I work, and I love it. I absolutely love it. It's a great place to be. I'm a staff usher at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, and that's what I find my, you know, little break from being a mom in from dancing all the time as well.
But I'm asking you to fight. I'm asking you to... What a fight looks like is this. At Yerba Buena and at many other places, San Francisco is the center for international, especially Latina art, and music and dancing and all the rest of it, and museums and all of it. That's a whole huge world in San Francisco. I would fight by going and talking to everybody I possibly could to ask, say, this is my dream. I was put on this earth to be, I'm not stupid. I'm not just a dancer. I am a thinker and a dancer, and I want to make a big difference. And I feel I'll make a bigger difference working my way up from within an organization than going to school. Where should I talk to? Who should I talk to? Where should I go? Fight. Una lucha grande. To fight your way into the right launch pad jobs. And if you then do, if you really do have that gift, somewhere, you may have some failures and dead ends like everybody else, but if you make that your fight, you will eventually find your place in this world. And yeah, maybe down the road you get hired and they say, you know, in order to be able to really be a teacher in this, you've got to get your bachelor's. Then there is a concrete purpose for doing it. But for now, as your plan A, I'd rather see you do la grande lucha than go to school. Does that make sense?
Thank you very much. It does.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. All right. I want to share some more of these thoughts, and then I promise toward the end I'm going to ask these self-assessment questions that I think are, I said at the top of the show that I have these, assemble these questions that I really think are useful to ask yourself that will perhaps be transformative for you. But I'm kind of enjoying sharing some of this collection of my best ideas that I've generated lately, and so I'm going to do that. There's another one on communication. My natural tendency, perhaps because I'm a New York Jew and perhaps I'm just a physiological type A with a big adrenal gland, is I interrupt too much. And something that I've heard again and again and again is that interrupting is bad. I remember on this show, one of the more vivid moments was when Lee Steinberg, the super sports agent, was on the show talking about what it's really like to be an agent. And he said the worst thing you can ever do is interrupt. And I asked him why. And he said, it's because not only is it invalidating and rude to somebody, but very often, if you let them talk, they're going to reveal something. They're more relaxed the more they talk, and they're going to reveal more that is at the essence of what they're thinking and feeling than if you interrupted them. Also, they get greater clarification. Very often we get clear about what we really are trying to say the more we talk. And so he says, interrupting is the worst. And then when I had Joelle and Demetrius on the show, who was the famed a jury consultant, I think, on the O.J. Simpson trial and the like, she said the same thing. So I think it's true, but I guess where I would draw the line is a little more moderate view. There are some people who are damn blowhards, and they just keep talking and talking. You know what they're going to say, and what they're going to say is not that interesting anyway. So I just think my current insight into interrupting is it's too black and white to say never interrupt. I think that's really wrong. But I think the answer for me is be more conscious about when you're interrupting. What is the probability that what they have to say is really going to add more value? What is the benefits? If there's something you really want to say and you're afraid you're going to forget it, you might want to interrupt it. I'm just asking you, instead of black and white, don't interrupt, be more nuanced and be more conscious about the wisdom of interrupting at a given point in time. All right. I think what I'll do is I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you or someone you love has got a work problem of any sort, direct or indirectly related to work, I invite you to call for what I call a 3-minute career makeover or work over. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi.
Is this me?
Yes.
Okay, hi. Let's see. In February, I lost my job that I had for 15 years because of depression.
Because of the economic depression or your depression?
No, my personal depression.
Yeah.
And which is something I've struggled with during my life.
Yeah.
But I've also been pretty high functioning for that, and it was kind of atypical to like have such a hard time. But anyway, I'm recovered pretty much. I mean, I still carry that with me, but I'm trying to re-enter the job market, and I'm 48. I've had two sort of careers in my life. One is environmental nonprofit program manager recently, and then prior, when I was younger, I was an accountant for 10 years or so in business. And I'm finding that I have this opportunity in a way to figure out if I should sort of reskill myself or, I know your position's on, academic programs.
Right.
I've been following that, so
right.
You don't have to do that.
Right.
But
I won't, I promise.
But I am kind of wondering, should I do something, or should I just jump back into getting another job? Like, I see that there are certificate programs out there that would kind of, they'd be interesting to take. I like doing academics. I just don't know how valuable they are to an employer. I don't know how much they care about, you know, that certificate in project management. Or
let's talk about it. Let's start with that.
Okay.
Is it clear in your mind? Again, I guess maybe I'm just in a cosmic mood. Would the goddess tell you you should go back to being an environmental program manager with a certificate, an accounting, go back to accounting, or do something completely different? What would the goddess say to you?
The environmental program management, I enjoy it a lot, although I don't necessarily enjoy the nonprofit world always.
Okay. So if we said that you were going to, if there was a for-profit environmental thing that would not trigger your depression very much, what kind of a gig would it be?
Well, probably not. I'm not a for-profit kind of gal.
Yeah.
I don't
okay.
Think
so
would
where would you, would it be government or nonprofit?
Government. I'm
great.
Looking at government.
So let's pretend, now which, so there's a bunch of environmental agencies, of course, there's Cal EPA, there's the US EPA, there's OSHA, you know, there's the part, what agency would be the dream agency for you to work for?
I think some city government agency.
Great. Great. And let's say I was the head of that agency in the city of San Francisco, let's say, and I said to you, I'll make your name up, let's say it's Mary. Mary, you know, I think you're great. Your values are in the right place. You're a fabulous person. I'll give you any job you want as long as it brings out the best in you and does the best for the environment and for this agency. Do you know what kind of job you'd want?
I do, although I don't really know what it's actually like to work in city government.
Okay, we'll worry about that later. Right now, let's...
Okay.
Yeah. What would the job be?
Managing a program of any kind that had environmental content.
Great. And would the goddess say that you'd be wise to take that certificate program or an individual course in project management, or should you first try to get that job?
Maybe concurrently, actually.
Great.
You know.
Great. So, so if I said that right now that your job is, when you get off the phone, is to look in the front, believe it or not, of your white pages that list all the government agencies, or simply go to city and county. What city do you live in?
I live in Berkeley.
Right. So look both at city and county, city of Berkeley, city of Oakland, city of Richmond, and the city of San Francisco, and look for the various environmentally related agencies. Then go to their websites and go to the website of those agencies and learn about what kind of stuff they do. Very often public agencies list the names of their directors, assistant directors, and whatever. And then either write or make a phone call or write to them, basically saying what you do well and the fact that you're going to be enrolling in this project management course as well and you have this experience, and might they have some advice for you? If I asked you to do that and make your target to write 5 of those letters and make 5 of those phone calls, how does that feel?
It feels good. Let me ask you though. I mean, a lot of times when I'm looking at everything that about this job, searching. Mm-hmm. I never know if it's actually going to be of benefits or if like it's valued by employers. But you're telling me that they will accept these letters and be interested in what I'm writing them about.
Who knows? You have nothing to lose. What I'm saying is, instead of letting life do you, which is looking at the ads and seeing what's sort of a fit, and then you apply and it's not really that good a fit. You know, it's much smarter to go and ask for what you want, contact the people with the power to hire you, get their advice. They may tell you about niches you're not even aware of. You're building a relationship with them a little bit so that you may become an inside candidate when a job gets advertised. The point is the risk-reward ratio of writing those letters to the target people you'd want to work for is worth doing and is much more empowering than just being passive and answering ads. Make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that does. And I just wonder also if you have any other advice about like job searching at 48 just trying to re-enter?
There are people who are 48 and 58 and 68 who get hired every day, and there are those who don't, partly because of age. Age discrimination exists, but I like to think of it as one strike against you, not three. And there are some employers who would rather have an older worker, but you can't even think about it. It's just a waste of time to think about it. What you want to do is either not think about it or, because 48 is young, 48 is nothing. But if you were 58, I would, and you're walking in the interview and there's your gray hair and your wrinkles, they can't ask about it because it's illegal, but it's a 500-pound gorilla. They think that you're probably going to be, your memory isn't going to be as good, your motivation isn't going to be good, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd lead with it. I would say something like, you may be looking at me, I'm probably older than your average applicant, and of course I'm not 25, but there are some strengths. I've been a project manager for 12 years, and I've seen a lot of things go, I see what works, what doesn't work. So if you're looking for a 25-year-old, you have the wrong person, but I think that my age actually brings some strengths. Leading, notice, and I'd say it in a very matter-of-fact way, I wasn't defensive, I didn't sound litigation-oriented, I led with it. I bring it up so that, if they want a 25-year-old, they're going to get it. They're not going to hire me no matter what. They'll say, we found somebody whose skill set is more closely aligned with the position. No, that BS. But, you just put yourself out there, and the more you put yourself out there asking for what you want in this world, as long as it's ethical, just like that previous caller who is the woman who loves dance and children, the more you put yourself out there in the environment and to the people with the potential to hire you, the better things are. And in the end, the less depressed you'll feel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for calling the show.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. All the lines will add it up, so instead of giving out more stuff, I will go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Emco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hi.
Hello, am I on the air?
It is. You are on the air.
Okay, great. Thanks. My name is Sam. I'm actually calling on behalf of my wife, mm-hmm. who is, obviously a happy wife is happy life.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Her career issues are really making her miserable. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it might be driving us towards making, kind of bad family decisions.
Right.
So in that spirit, we met in about 10 years ago in New York City. She had just started a second career, which was to go to dental school at NYU. Her father was and is a prosthodontist, so he mm-hmm. does dentures for old people, and he was in the Navy for many years as she was growing up. And then her parents' marriage almost broke up because of money issues, and her father left the Navy and went into private practice and is very successful.
Mm-hmm.
So she experienced kind of want, mm-hmm. You know, and there was a time where you know her she needed money to go and do some activity, and her mother just stared at her and balled up the $20 bills and threw them at her in the car. Because money was so tight and she was so anxious about it, I think. Right, so this is just to give you some background on how much it matters to be liquid. So we went through the dental school years in New York when we were getting to know each other. We got married in 2008. She did her residency for general dentistry, and then she got into a program in California for pediatrics, which was a specialty that she wanted to do.
Right.
Because, you know, it had great prospects, lower cost of entry or cost of, you know, there's lower overhead. You're not paying massive lab fees for each patient, right?
Right.
So, and she was very explicit, too, that she didn't want to do general dentistry because she felt like that was the loser thing, you know, that like all the cool kids at NYU were going and doing specialties.
Mm-hmm.
And if she had had more, maybe a little bit more ambition, she would have done orthodontics,
mm-hmm.
but it's really hard to get into those programs. So
right.
pediatrics was like
right.
very close second choice.
Right.
And she wanted to go back to California where her family was. I'm an East Coast guy. But I kind of said, all right, you know, you can go and apply to those things and we'll try it. You know, we'll live in L.A. for a year and see how it goes. It'll be easy for me to get a job. I'm an architect. You know, but I had a pretty successful career working for big firms in New York. And then, you know, it was 2008 and the bottom fell out. So she came to L.A. by herself for her first year of a two-year program. And I stayed in New York. I actually moved in with my parents. So that we could fund her apartment, you know, her living in L.A. better, and I could sort of save money. So we lived apart for a year, but we managed to get pregnant anyway. And so I came out to L.A. with, like, nothing clear about what I was going to do career-wise. My firm gave me six months of part-time work as a kind of, you know, scout, but I was scouting for infrastructure projects in Los Angeles and sort of 2009, 2010, which didn't feel like it was, you know, a guaranteed winner.
You know what, I'm going to need to ask you to get to kind of come to...
Sorry. Okay, please. Yeah. So she moved to Northern California with me for my dream job, which popped up out of nowhere. And she's finding it incredibly hard to find jobs that she likes, associate positions that she feels good about. So she's driving all over the place. And so she wants to open her own practice, but I think really the issue is that I feel like she's not willing to network to drive herself to get the best jobs or find the best partners to open a practice.
I think I'm going to interrupt. I think it's very, you know, when she is, I think opening a practice is very daunting. It's extremely expensive. She's somebody who is worried about money. I do think what she needs to do is she does need to find out, she needs to join an existing pediatric practice. She'll find kindred spirits. It's a, you know, I think she needs to just have a very, we don't want to make things overwhelming. Where do you guys live right now?
We live in Sunnyvale.
Right. So I would simply have her go to Yelp.com and mm-hmm. find the children's dentist practices that have, you know, they're always going to be, you know, I've actually had people write phony bad reviews about me, my competitors. But in general, if you have a lot of, you know, if predominantly five-star reviews, that's probably a pretty good dental office. She should identify, make a target, like there are five dental practices that have the highest overall Yelp reviews that are pediatric specialties. She needs to write them a letter or phone them, whichever is better. And you can, if she's reluctant to do that kind of stuff, she's not a networker, you help her with that, and she writes a letter, you know, explaining that she'd like to join their practice. And that's the way to put things in motion in a very focused, practical way. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you for your feedback.
You're welcome. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. Hi, it's you. Well, you're gone, so let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. So I have been out of work since last October. I've been doing some freelance work, and I have a pretty varied background, but I'm kind of under a lot of pressure. I have a lot of debt, and I'm worried that, you know, in San Francisco that the competition's really high.
Yep.
But what I'm interested in is design, like user experience, like helping people use technology, like accessibility, usability.
I love that. I love user interface and interface design. I think it's one of the most interesting jobs in the world. Continue.
Yeah. So, and I think one of my favorite jobs in the past was tutoring, helping students with their academic writing and that kind of stuff. So, but then my degree is in photography, and I've done photography and design in the past for freelance. But you know, economically, it's not panning out as I'd hoped. So, you know, I'm really looking for something that's full time to help pay for benefits and that I can, you know, get on top of my debt and that kind of thing. But I'm just having a hard time. I've applied to a lot of jobs. A lot of times I don't get answers or I don't get the job.
Okay, cool. Let's the art component, the photography art component, that's something that's too offshoreable and outsourceable. They're doing a lot of sending all that, you know, unless it's a very high level, they send that to India or to Philippines. Tutoring is really rewarding, really wonderful. But the piece I'm jumping on here from what you said is the user interface, the user experience design. How good are you at that? And in what niches?
I don't have any actual formal experience doing it, like working as it, but the last company I worked for was a design firm that did a lot of that. So I learned a lot from my boss there, and I was able to do some research, you know, on our users and clients and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed doing that
as
well.
What kind of product?
We had some clients for a solar company and some healthcare and then also weather.
These are websites or these are concrete products?
Websites and mobile apps.
Oh, got it. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So if I said that what the smart, and you talked a bit correctly about how difficult the San Francisco job market, it really is very competitive, as you said. Do you want to stay here? Can you move? Do you want to work remotely potentially for companies that are away? What are your thoughts about the geography question?
I really like San Francisco. I'd love not to move. And I like the Bay Area,
Do you have a particular, interest in a certain kind of webs? Does it matter what the whether it is solar or you have expertise in that might make you a better candidate for a job in kind of user experience in that space?
I am really interested in food and sustainability around that. I'm also, you know, good content too, like some journalism. I think it's really frustrating when you go to a website and you want to read a serious article and there's all these, like, things jumping at you, you know?
Yeah, there's not going to be any money in journalism. Yeah. But food, yes. So, yeah. And you talk about sustainability. So you're in the alternate food, organic, local, sustainable kind of food world. What if I said that that's what you need to do? You need to visit some websites of major, you know, people, you want to make money. You said you want full-time, you want benefits, all the rest of it. So if I said I want you to, you know, like I happen to know about Revolution Foods. Revolution Foods is a company that is revolutionizing the way in which school lunches are. They're healthier and all the rest of that. And I just happen to know, but there's a bunch of them. If I said I want you to look for the alternative healthy food space, right, it could be organic food distributors that sell from farmers to gourmet supermarkets, whatever the hell it is, and that your target is to come up with five such food entities, and that you are to look at their websites, and if they're crappy, if their user interface is bad or whatever, you are to write a letter making a couple of suggestions saying, you know, this is your love, you have a deep commitment to healthy food, and that you also have some experience in user experience enhancement, and these are a couple of suggestions merely not to tell you what to do, but to give you a window into the way in which I think, should we talk to see about how I might be able to be of help to you? How do you feel about making that your homework assignment, finding those five and writing those letters?
I can do that.
I know you can do that. Do you want to do that?
I do. It's hard for me to reach out to, but I mean, obviously, me too.
If you're more comfortable on the phone. If you're more comfortable writing, write. But do it. You got it. It sounds like that's what you got to do. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Work with Marty Nemko. So we've only got about 5 minutes left, so I promised at the top of the show that I was going to ask you, I've assembled this list of questions that you should ask yourself that they're kind of self-assessment questions, and potentially they could be something that springboard you into action about something. So I'm just going to end the show kind of with asking these questions. The first ones are about, I guess I should start with the work-life ones because the show's about work. Should you find better work? And if so, do you need to quit your job to make that likely? Should you spend more or less time and effort at work? How about at home? How about on your volunteer work? How about on your creative outlet? Should you change how you behave at work? Toward your boss? Toward your coworkers? Toward one or more of your supervisees? How about toward the work itself? Should you change how you behave, your attitude or behavior about work? Should you try to make money from your creative outlet? Should you try to make money from your creative outlet as your main source of income? Do you want to work for some cause? If so, what cause? When, if ever, should you retire? Those are the work-life questions. Because everything interacts with work. I'm going to ask you some relationship ones. Because, as I said, so many people are better off if they their work life is enhanced, if their relationships are better. So is there somebody you should spend more time with? Is there somebody you should spend less time with? How do you really feel about your mom? Your dad? Your stepmom, if any? Your stepdad, if any? How do you really feel about each of your kids? Should you have a child? Is there anything you should change about your sex life? Except about your sex life. Other area is health. Again, all these impact work directly or indirectly. What's your best guess as to how old you'll be when you're no longer capable of doing professional level work? Does that suggest anything you want to do now? Do you want to lose weight or accept yourself as is? If you want to lose weight, what, if anything, do you think will actually help you defy the odds and lose the weight and keep it off? Do you believe you're using mind-altering substances too much, too little, or just right? If you think you're using too much, is there anything you want to commit to doing about it? Should you exercise more, less, differently? And then here are some general questions about life in general, which of course impact on work. What's the question you're most afraid to be asked? How would you like your next decade to be different from your previous one? Is that realistic? If so, is there anything you want to do now to help make that happen? What really would give your life more meaning? If you didn't care what anyone thought, what's your most deeply held aspiration? What's an unusual, even weird value you hold? Does that suggest anything career-wise or otherwise? Imagine everyone who knows you well is in a room. You aren't there, and you know they'll never find out what they said. What's the most important positive thing and negative thing they would agree is true about you? What you might you want to do in light of that? And I'm looking at the clock, and that is all the time we've got. I have more of these. So if you want more, you can email me. I'll email you the whole list of questions. My email address is mnemko@comcast.net. That's mnemko@comcast.net. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for today. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr. And, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday. I will do more 3-minute workovers on callers. And I will talk about energy careers with the co-director of the California Institute for Energy and the Environment, Merwin Brown. And until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.